The wheels of political correctness are rolling again after Donald Trump. The zeitgeist, or spirit of the age, is one of superficial judgment, snap decisions, lack of rigor, judgmental attitudes, hypocrisy, a lack of virtue, and very often a need for human sacrifice. Once again, in the Revenge of Khan, where the entire establishment demanding its pound of flesh against the Donald, Trump has not done what is claimed. He did not launch an anti-Muslim attack against the Gold Star family. In fact, Khan is a plant, a dupe, put there by the DNC in plain sight to trip up the GOP candidate. And now the media is thrilled with the idea, and the establishment and the political class and the media taking out Trump one last time. In the meantime, in the outrage and uproar, the GOP itself seeks to eat its young and candidates, no matter the suicide mission they are on. In fact, our entire society in the West itself is on a long and deranged suicide mission, one that was launched over a century ago. The successful must be punished by the less fortunate, a mandate laid down by the leftists in their illiberal assault against Christianity and its fruit, the modern world. Can Trump shrug off yet another attack? Does Hillary, in her crazed lust for power, money, and revenge, have an antidote? Will the GOP publicly sacrifice their own candidate in an insane commitment to show that they are more saintly and liberal than the Democrats? In this savage season, where will trumps over reason or triumphs over reason, anything is possible. Stay tuned, sports fans. Good morning, folks. Yeah, I've been thinking about this, doing a little bit of research, and this outraged Khan has really tapped into some kind of this festering wound that we call political correctness, and nobody is allowed to turn its back or ignore political correctness because that is basically taken over as our national religion. So the bloodlust, the just crazy need to punish people for ignoring political correctness is just remarkable to me. And Kathy had called up yesterday and said, you know, basically, Trump went too far this time, and how can you defend him? And then, as usual, I went back and listened to what was said, and it's totally different than the media. But you know, the media knows that the average person is not going to go on YouTube or do research and find out what exactly Trump said. Both sides of the aisle want to kill this guy. The GOP wants to, and this is always the MO of the right. The right is trying to prove to the left that they're good, because the left, just in general, dismisses people on the right as either ignorant, illiterate, wildly biased, evil, or insane. So the right is always fighting. Instead of just saying anybody who believes that against me is never going to be converted, the right is always trying to prove, you know, the people on the right have an inferiority complex because they can't stand the idea that they're doing the right thing, and they're totally getting their character assassinated in the media every day. So they look for these acts of symbolic, sacrifice where they stand up and admit what they, some person or thing that they stood for is not right. So Sarah Palin is a classic example. There was nothing wrong with Sarah Palin, but when the left started to attack her, nobody on the right would stand up for her. So she became this complete joke, just a bozo. And so that's what they're trying to do with Trump. And the GOP is taking part in this on the surface because they want to show that they understand that Donald Trump has gone too far. Meanwhile, not even admitting that what Donald Trump is attacking is 1,000 times, is a million times worse than anything he's been accused of, whatever it is, racism or whatever. The left is trying to take America down. Isn't that obvious? Why else would you leave the border open and then bring in, actually hire a company, you know, dismiss, dissolve the laws on the border and it just make sure that they're not enforced, and then take these people and transport them across the United States into various small towns. They are absolutely destroying small towns across America. There are a number of counties and small towns that are thinking of declaring bankruptcy because they're overwhelmed by the amount of new people that are showing up and the social welfare system. So they're going after Trump, and this guy Khan has some sort of a connection to Saudi Arabia. He hasn't been here that long. He's gotten some sort of money from the Saudis. And I mean, it's obvious when the guy gets, this is the thing that kills me. We're supposed to be following, we're supposed to be impressed by this guy who gets up and just gives this cartoon version of Donald Trump. And his son is one of, I think it was 14 Muslims that have been killed in action for America. That's it? Really? I mean, Muslims are totally devoted to America, but there's only been 14 killed in the, you know, in the last 10 years in the Middle East for America. That says something right there. It says to me that they're not overly involved in the military. I could be wrong, but anyway. What you're trying to do is keep the order together. You're trying to keep the established order, which is based on political correctness. It's based on multiculturalism, which says that all cultures are the same. Even for the sake of the argument, if you brought in somebody from New Guinea, a cannibal, there would be some idiots in the left arguing that he's got a right to, or she's got a right to practice her culture or religion. You've got a fight, and it's on the right and the left. This is the amazing thing to me about Donald Trump, is he is taking on the entire establishment. I've never seen anything like it. And the entire establishment, both right and left, are joining together to try to kill him, because you do understand that Paul Ryan is not a conservative, correct? You do understand that Paul Ryan was behind the granting of amnesty to tens of millions of illegal people in the country. You understand that McConnell is not the sharpest knife in the drawer, and he doesn't stand for conservative principles either. And obviously the left isn't. They're more committed to their political correctness than anything else. I don't really see that much of a difference between the leadership, the high leadership of the two parties. I mean, maybe the GOP is a little more rational, but they've drawn the conclusion a long time ago, just like the Boy Scouts have, that they can't beat these people in the establishment. They can't beat the resident leadership. They can't beat them at the Supreme Court. They can't beat them in the media, in the media cycles. They can't beat them in political argumentation at the university. So they just gave up. They give up. And so then you have the Boy Scouts taking on something that they didn't really ever need to address, which was homosexuality, homosexual leadership, homosexual. Can you imagine, like 50 years ago, the idea, you know, we've got to have homosexual scout leaders. They capitulated to it without a fight. They just rolled over. And now you've got the Boy Scouts, the local Boy Scouts, shutting down an entire event meant to help poor children because they don't support homosexuality. Although I did tell you that I realized the story was a little bit more complicated. Kindness for Kids Day, this charity event for obviously for kids right before school starts. And the Boy Scouts have a booth down there, or we're supposed to have a booth. And then they're told, well, you can't join us because you support the gay movement. And then you can hardly blame the Boy Scouts for turning around. And although I totally disagree with their attitude, what they stand for, they turn around and report them to the city. you know, they piss somebody off in the Boy Scouts. But I mean, here's the mistake of this church. You pick a fight with somebody, and then when they fight back, you just give up. And that is the people on the right. People on the right give up. There's no more loyalty to principle. Everybody is on this, like, I've got to defend myself. I can only be out for myself. I just have to defend me. I can't afford to take the risk of getting into a fight when that's why we're here, right? And, you know, this church picks a fight with the Boy Scouts. You can't take part in this. Boy Scouts say, oh, yeah? Go down to the city and say they're being prejudiced against us, which is technically true. The church was being prejudiced against homosexuality, or it was being biased. Now, I would argue that, I mean, everybody is biased. Everybody has prejudice. Here's an example, just a general example. Our society is biased against sex offenders. And they keep a list of these people, and these people have to report so that other individuals in the society can know where these people are, because the experience and studies have showed that many sex offenders are repeat offenders. And so there's a bias against those, but it's not an illogical, it's not a wrong bias. It's certainly not an illegal bias, and it makes the community safer. So the church had their bias against the gay leadership of the Boy Scouts. But the mistake that they made is they didn't say, what if the Boy Scouts don't cooperate? What if they push back? And so the Boy Scouts pushed back. They got the whole thing shut down. And then these people just gave up. Oh, my God. Well, the city told us that, oh, okay. Well, we got to shut down our whole thing. All right. Well, we'll just do it. So, I mean, if you're going to pick a fight with somebody, get ready. Get ready for a battle. Don't pick a fight. Don't, you know, start something. Take a position, and then when the person puts their hands up, say, oh, well, you know, I'm a Christian, I'm a pacifist, or this isn't worth the fight, or this will destroy the whole church. Get in there, fight back. Who knows what's going to happen? There was just a case that was won back in the East on this kid that was accused of a sex assault. He was kicked out. I think he went to Yale. Maybe in another kind of an Ivy League school. He was an athlete. I think he was kicked out of school right before his graduation. Then he went to the court and said, you know, they just assumed I was wrong because I was a guy, and I have a right to the presumption of innocence, and the court backed him. So you never know when you get involved in resistance what's going to happen, but you can't just give up. So anyway, back to Donald Trump. Everybody's trying to pile on this guy and destroy him. And it's a very complicated situation. Anyway, I got a little bit more information, by the way, on the Clinton Foundation. I'm going to play a little bit all this week, a little bit in both hours all this week. And I'm going to do that when we come back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. And I've got Ben Rossin coming on tomorrow for the Rossin Report. And I've got a studio interview after the show with Steve Pierce. So, anyway, some good stuff coming up. It's going to be a fantastic show today, though. You're not going to believe. Speaking of evil, who's more evil? The person who starts a war and kills 25,000 people because they think it would be okay, which is Hillary, or Donald Trump, who insulted somebody. You care about Muslims, right? And dying Muslims, American Muslims, whatever. So Hillary allows 25,000 of them to die, but Donald Trump doesn't give supposedly the right respect. And by the way, this guy comes to America and he starts preaching to us from the Constitution, our Bible, and says the gold starred mother, the gold star family's in there. Wrong, lies. He doesn't know any better because he doesn't know the Constitution. That's like somebody getting up in church and saying, well, you know, in the Ecclesiastes, it talks about the internet, you know? Anyway, 621 Kelly O'Connell, Van Morrison this week, Tupelo Honey. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 if you disagree. We will be back.
You can take all the tea in China, put it in a big brown bag for me, sail right round all the seven oceans, drop it straight into the deep blue sea.
All right, man, I got a lot of stuff I want to cover this morning, but basically, I've got a couple of books in front of me. One is by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the Russian dissident, who's a very, very important, he's seen by a lot of people as the leader of anti-communism in Russia. He was in a concentration camp for decades. And the book is called From Under the Rubble. Now, some of the chapters are by him, some are by other dissidents, but one of the chapters is by a guy by the name of Igor Shafarevich, and it's absolutely fascinating. And it's a chapter that says the motive force of socialism, and it's very interesting. But without, you know, reading any excerpts from it, I read this last night right before I went to bed. The argument is that, well, actually, let me see. You might find some of this kind of illuminating. Well, let me tell you about it, and then I'll get a quote for you. This person Igor Shafarevich says that the spirit behind socialism is death. And that not only that, but that everybody knows it who's in socialism. Anybody who gets deep enough into socialism realizes that the spirit of socialism is death, which is why when you look at the USSR communist China, there was 150 or 200 million people killed by the government. And what is fascinating is that... speaking of zeitgeist or the spirit of the age, that was the spirit of socialism, and the people that went into it had basically accepted that they would probably die. And that spirit, in my opinion, is still in there. I mean, so many of the suicide thing, I mean, this like crazy commitment to abortion, where Hillary Clinton, somebody told me about this last night, Hillary Clinton said that a fetus has no rights up to the last second before it's born. So in theory, you could kill. That justifies Obama's position for partial birth abortion. Partial birth abortion, meaning that a live baby is taken out of the birth canal about halfway, and then they kill it. They stick a knife in its skull and collapse the skull and everything. Stick a knife in its heart or whatever. But that spirit is, and so you see this destructive spirit. And all throughout, you know, socialism and communism, Marxism, these people don't differentiate between the phrase socialism and communism, Marxism. Differentiate because it's the same thing. It's kind of cut from the same cloth. According to Marx, socialism was a step on the way to communism. Communism is where society is freed from the ownership of stuff. So I just want to point out one other thing, and we do have a call here. Pointed out in a second, something from Eric Vogelin. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is Jim.
Hey, Jim, good morning to you. Hope you're well. Thanks for the call. What's up?
Well, I heard what Donald Trump said. I don't really think Donald Trump really didn't say anything wrong.
That's what I'm saying. He's got to be destroyed, though. He's got to be destroyed because he threatens both sides of the aisle.
Oh, he does. I think the GOP really doesn't want to win. You could tell when McCain ran. You can tell when Romney ran. But did you hear the Michael Savage show yesterday? They had a very good guy. I think his name was Waleed Shabbat or something.
Shabbat. Shabbat's a very famous anti-Muslim.
Yes, and he knew all about this Khan guy. And he's a lawyer. Apparently, he's a lawyer in New York City that does immigration work. And he's got connections to Saudi Arabia, probably to the Muslim Brotherhood. And his thing is about getting green cards for people to come in here from the Middle East and Central Asia.
But, you know, the media is not going to do the job of taking this information out because it goes against their goal. So we've got to do it ourselves. That's the importance of talk radio. That's the importance of the alternative media. We got to get the story out.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you ever read some of these books I've read, these few books I've read, but the goal of fundamental Islam, not radical, fundamentalism, is to destroy the West, kill the West, take no prisoners.
Yeah.
That's their goal. It's in every book I've read.
Well, of course it is. I mean, they have, in Islam, you have two houses. You have Dar es Salaam, which is the house of God, and you have the Dar es Harbi, which is the house of the unbelievers or the house of the enemy combatants. And so in Islam is laid out, once you accept that, which all true Muslims do, it lays the foundation for a permanent war.
Yeah. I don't understand why most women in this country aren't screaming bloody murder to all of us. Protect us. Don't they realize that once ISIS takes over this country, they will be put in burqas or their lives will totally change? They're like sheep. They're blind. They're blind. They don't see what's going to happen to their lives. And they think it can't happen. Yesterday, something happened. This lady was on the internet yesterday. Wow, she had a very smart woman. She said, the Muslim Brotherhood has already penetrated our many places in our government. Stop proposing this political correctness thing that
Jim,
you can't say anything bad about them.
Jim, once you've accepted the thesis that America is bad and that all morality is relative, then there's nothing wrong with enemy state coming in and infiltrating you because you deserve it. And see, what the West has lost is they've lost the ability to fight for the higher good, or to fight for, you know, the truth versus falsity, or to fight for virtue versus, you know. So this is why when because we've lost the concept, so we can't, it's not worth fighting for anymore because we don't even really see the difference. When homosexuals come in and begin to run the Boy Scouts, which would have wildly alarmed people 50 years ago, people see it as a non-issue because there's really no difference between gay and straight. And at some point, there's not going to be any difference between adult and child. I mean, everything is thrown into the same pot. So you've lost the ability to use your logic to defend yourself. We have been educated into imbecility in this country.
Oh, absolutely. Everything you try again, they call you racist. First thing they do is call you racist. People have to. I'm glad there are some people in the media fighting up, mostly on Fox News, fighting this stuff, but that's about the only place. But right away they call you racists and, you know, everything else. They invented these words.
All right, I got to take a break. Thanks for the call. Good call. All right, folks, we'll take a break here, kind of in the middle of another idea, but I'll come back and hit it before we move on. Kelly O'Connell on West Cruises AM 1450, 523-1450, 634. Real nice out right now. Be right back.
As a Tupelo, honey, she's an angel of the first degree. She's a sweet, she's the sweetest Tupelo, honey. Just like honey, baby, from the sea.
All right, let me just finish my thought, because there's this movement towards suicide, literal suicide and symbolic suicide, and the people. Well, you know, if you study the Russian Revolution and the revolution in China, what you find out is that a lot of the people, this Russian Revolution or the Communist Revolutions got from the French Revolution their spirit, which was the spirit of destruction, the spirit of wiping out all your enemies, and anybody who disagreed with you was your enemy. There was a lot of people who were revolutionaries in Russia who were wiped out. And so it degenerated into this cult of insanity in Russia under Stalin. And Lenin really was no better. Lenin was completely ill-suited. None of these communist leaders were suited for leadership. They were anti-leaders, you know. And you get that spirit from Obama. Obama really doesn't like traditional leadership. And Obama is passive-aggressive, or he's always playing these kind of political games where he's saying one thing on the surface and he's working against it underneath to undermine it. And this community organizer shtick. But Eric Voegelin is a guy that I've read a lot. He was considered to be one of the most important political scientists of the last century. He came out of Germany during the time of Hitler, and probably if he had stayed there, he would have been killed by Hitler. But he has got this very complex analysis that I just wanted to throw at you and let you think about it and move on to something else. And, you know, kind of fascinating. It's the idea of deicide. So we're living in this culture that has arisen from Europe in over 2,000 years in concert with the church, with Christian theologians, and with enlightened leaders like Charlemagne and Alfred the Great, who are actively taking Christian policy and using or Christian teachings and using it to change society. You've got this development of basically a Christian society, which is and one of the things that is stated in, and I'm trying to remember the guy that I'd mentioned him the other day. He's another German writer, and he said basically all the institutions in the West are first test driven in the church, and when they're successful in there, then they're kind of desacralized. The church is kind of pulled out of them, out of the ideas or the structure, and then it's transferred over to society. So that's where we came from. That's why at some level it is absurd to argue whether the founding fathers were Christians. Therefore, the United States is either a Christian or a non-Christian nation. That is a nonsensical argument, because that what the founding fathers were working with was Christian. But anyway, there is this idea of deicide, the death of God, the assassination of God, that is found in Nietzsche. God is dead. I mean, and Nietzsche was insane, so you got to be careful in trying to understand what he was writing about. But there is this idea, and I'll just kind of roll it out for you. You can think about it, of the fact that we come out of this Christian background, this general Christian background. Whether any individual is Christian in general is not the issue, or pardon me, specifically in general, that's our view of life. That's where we get our particular take on everything. Society becomes progressively, it walks away from that, becomes progressively more pagan or less Christian. And these are statistics coming out right now in America. We're going through this pagan conversion, or this atheistic agnostic conversion. And Eric Voegelin says one of the results of this is the creation of a false religion. This liberalism is a false religion. It's a fake Christianity. It's Christianity with the God sucked out of it, with Christ sucked out of it. And that, according to Voegelin, and a lot of other writers have noticed this, including this guy, Igor Shafirovich, is there is within this, it's, I guess it's kind of a theological thing, is that there is the sense of guilt that all people have. And in Christianity and other religions, the religion is supposed to help with that. Once you get rid of the religion, man is left to deal with his own guilt, man and woman. And so there is this attempt to kill God and replace it with good works or liberalism, whatever. At the same time, though, it's also a suicide mission for humanity because people cannot live without God. So anyway, that's the idea. I thought I'd kind of throw it out to you as to why liberalism in its most potent form, which is Marxism, is so murderous and it is so suicidal. Because not only were a large number, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people killed in the Marxist nations, but the society itself, of course, during the same time cannibalized itself. And one of the examples of that is that going into World War II, Stalin, who was so paranoid, decided to kill all of the good leaders in his army. So when they went into the war, they didn't have really good leadership anymore. That's just one example. But anyway, let's take a break here, and I've got a little bit more on... Let me do a little run here on the Clinton Cash thing, because I want to get it into your mind that there's something really crazy that is going on in the Clinton Foundation. And I just want to get some facts out there to you. It is 6:45, Kelly O'Connell, AM, Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. Call in. Be right back.
You can't stop us on the road of freedom. You can't keep us, cause our eyes can see.
All right, I got to throw off this Clinton Cash thing to the next hour. I just did some searching, and the gentleman that just called up, Kizer Khan, he's an attorney. I'm astounded that he's an attorney, and he stood up there with the Constitution and said the gold star was in the Constitution. He's got a heavy accent, though. He may not have been here for a while. He may have been here 10 or 20, 30 years. I'd like to know where he went to law school. And anyway, he's an attorney, but here's from the American Thinker published yesterday. Who is Kizer Khan, the father of a fallen U.S. soldier? Kizer Khan is the father of a U.S. soldier who died in Iraq, who spoke poignantly of the loss of his son and then used the platform to attack Donald Trump. On Sunday, he tweeted further disparaging remarks about Melania Trump. Google shows this for his law practice. His New York City address is here, but the phone number is in D.C. Kizer Khan, law offices of K.M. Khan, 415 Madison Avenue, 15th floor, New York, New York. Phone 202-279-0806. And this guy goes on to say, I was surprised, or this is actually a lady writing this, I was just surprised that a New York law office would list a D.C. telephone number, so I called it to check and was told by the man who answered that it was not his or Khan's law office. The man who answered would not tell me who it was. So I did more digging and learned that it is also the phone number of a group called American Muslims Vote, which says its mission is to create an enlightened community by providing and developing patriotic American Muslim leadership and encouraging American Muslims to participate in the democratic process at local, state, national level and to vote on Election Day. I did some further research into who registered this domain name and when Kizer Khan registered it. Okay, who registered it and when? Kizer Khan registered it on July 23rd, 2016. She goes on to finish. She's looking increasingly like a plant to me, a Muslim Cindy Sheehan playing on people's sympathies to foster a Democratic Party political agenda. And, of course, in that goal, he has the full-throated support of the American media. So anybody in the media could have done some research on this and reported on it if they cared about the truth. They don't care about the truth. I sat there yesterday and watched an interview between Julian Assange and Jake Tapper, in which Assange would not say who gave the information to him that he published about the DNC and, you know, throwing the vote against Bernie Sanders. Jake Tapper focused on one question: would you publish information given to you by another country? And the follow-up question was related to that is, aren't you alarmed that foreign nations are trying to control our elections? And, you know, Assange wouldn't answer that. But it was more important to Tapper where the information came from than whether it was true, which I thought was just shocking. I mean, don't you care? Don't you care yourself whether something is true? All right, I've got something on the mother of the Benghazi victim being ignored while parents of slain Muslim soldier made headlines, and this is from Howard Kurtz.
Trump event in Pennsylvania. John, thank you. Two speeches, both by grieving parents, one given at the RNC by a mother whose son died in the Benghazi attack, the other given at the DNC by a father whose son died in Iraq. One went largely ignored while the other made headlines, even before Donald Trump jumped into the fray. Fox News media analyst and host of Fox's Media Buzz, Howard Kurtz, takes a look.
Two parents, both touched by tragedy, gave impassioned speeches on big stages. Kaiser Khan, a Muslim father whose soldier son was killed in Iraq, denounced Donald Trump at the Democratic convention.
Have you even read the United States Constitution?
Patricia Smith, whose son was killed in Benghazi, denounced Hillary Clinton at the Republican convention.
I blame Hillary Clinton personally for the death of my son.
But only one of them drew enormous attention. Khan's speech made the front page of the New York Times, and he was invited on NBC's Meet the Press and CNN's State of the Union.
That's, again, height of ignorance on a part of a candidate for the highest office of this nation. The way he showed disrespect towards the Gold Star mother of this country, that says it all.
Your wife.
My wife.
Khan was referring to Trump's appearance on ABC's This Week.
If you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She probably, maybe she wasn't allowed to have anything to say.
The Washington Post ran an op-ed by Ghazala Khan, who said she was too emotional to speak. Some analysts said Trump had escalated the controversy.
This wouldn't be a big story today if Trump hadn't stepped in it again and gone after the family.
But what about Patricia Smith? True, she'd castigated Clinton before in numerous interviews, but her speech was widely ignored and in some cases attacked.
A GQ writer tweeted, "I would like to beat her to death." Later had to apologize for it.
It's appalling.
MSNBC said that she ruined the night and it's a gross accusation to bring up Benghazi.
Clinton took a softer approach on Fox News Sunday.
Chris, my heart goes out to both of them. I don't hold any ill feeling for someone who, in that moment.
Who cares what's in Hillary Clinton's heart? It can't be good. All right, we'll take a little break here and be right back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, good morning, Kelly.
Who's this?
This is John.
What's going on?
Hey, I was, every time you talk about this guy, Khan.
Yeah.
I think about William Shatner on Star Trek when he was yelling, Khan!
The revenge of Khan, man.
Yeah.
Did you want to say anything?
No, that was it. I thought it was funny.
I'll see if I can find a clip. I'm back on the air. Thanks. All right. So I've got a clip of, I'm going to play this real quick. Here's Hillary. Well, I just don't have enough time here. I'll have to save it for the next hour. But to Hillary speaking about abortion, there's just so much stuff to deal with right now. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to get to Clinton Cash, but Anyway, a lot of stuff going on, but we've been gamed again. The media, nobody in the media does any research. And I don't know if it's because people in the media are disinterested. I mean, obviously they're disinterested in telling any other side than their angle that Donald Trump attacked this Gold Star family. I don't even know if they're capable of doing the research. I mean, I'm surprised to find out this guy's an attorney. He didn't sound like an attorney. Why hold up the Constitution and say, you must read this and, you know, to find out about the Gold Star? There's nothing in the Constitution about Gold Star families. It's like hundreds and hundreds of years later that this develops. But I find out he's an attorney. He's got a law office in New York City, and he's got a phone number in D.C., which tells me he's an operative. He lives in D.C., and that he's handpicked to attack Trump, and it's been so far successful. It's crazy. Nobody cares enough. That's how journalists make their name, is to come up with, you know, find great background information and tell a different story, but nobody's even interested in that anymore. 659 Kelly O'Connell and Amless Cruces AM 1450 523 1450 will come back to carry this on.
Men with insight, men in granite, knights in armor, bent on chivalry.
It's Kelly.
She does great to below high. She's an angel of the first degree.
She's an angel.
She's as sweet as triple of honey. Just like honey, baby.
I was just doing some research on this con guy, and he's not a member of the D.C. bar. I just looked him up in New York. When it has kind of a clumsy setup on that, and I don't see him listed as an attorney there, though I would have to go back and look for, I mean, he might be listed somewhere else, but I find his name interesting, Kaiser, because it reminds me of Kaiser Soze from that movie. The Usual Suspects, another weird coincidence. But anyway, all right, so let me play this. All right, so in my mind, Kaiser Khan is not just a plant, he's a fraud. Because, and I'm not saying as a Gold Star family member he's a fraud, he lost his son, he's certainly due to... he certainly has the right to get some sympathy, he and his wife. But I mean, he's not in here as some little innocent lamb standing up against the brutal terror of Donald Trump and then all of a sudden caught up in the media cycle. This guy is part of the establishment. He's working for the Democrats, and all of this is contrived. This was meant to create a firestorm, and this guy is a political operative. That's what I mean by him being a fraud. Let me get this clip, though, for Hillary, what she says about abortion. I found this jaw-dropping. You're telling me, switching gears here onto we got a phone call here. You're telling me that a baby has no rights whatsoever until it's born? Really? I mean, does that make any common sense to you? Or does that in any way seem moral? Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Kelly, it's Ralph.
Good morning, Ralph.
What you just said about this con fellow is exactly what I was going to say. He's a brown nose sucking up to the media, planted, paid by Hillary's campaign, and I have a bad gut feeling that his son was a sleeper just waiting to do the same damn thing that this major did in Fort Hood.
Well, we don't even need
the feeling I have.
Well, that's possible, but I mean, anything's possible at this point. He's dead now, but we don't even need that. Well, you know, the son might have been an unknowing dupe as part of this thing, but so the father is invested in getting Muslims into the media, into the political cycle, and also, you know, serving in the armed services, getting involved in politics and getting people to vote. The son seems to be part of this plan. The son gets killed, but now the father acts like maybe he got up and said the gold star is in the Constitution because he didn't want people to know that he was an attorney and would instantly realize that there's no mention of the gold star by the founding fathers, and that that this thing is a hoax. It's a hoax because he's a political operative. He is not some random person who is chosen out of a role of dead Muslim, you know, dead military Muslim family members. He is a political operative. His job is to take out Donald Trump.
Kelly, this man doesn't even know what he's talking about. I have the Constitution right here in front of me. I read the 7 articles over and over again.
Yeah.
I read the 28 amendments over and over again. And that man doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
But did he do it because he wants people to think that he doesn't know what he's talking about, so he seems like just a random person? You know, I mean, he's a political operative. I know that he was sent in to take out Trump. That's what I know. Everything else I'm open to, but I know that for a fact because all of this stuff doesn't happen by accident. It's not a coincidence.
That's right. You're correct there.
All right, Ralph, anything else?
No, thank you.
Have a good day. All right. Con. C-O-N. He's a con artist. I'm sorry he lost his kid. I really am. I'm sure his kid was a great person, and we give him the benefit of the doubt that he was 100% of a patriot. But I would hope that if the son found out what the dad was doing, if he found out in the next life what his dad was doing, he would be ashamed. All right, here's switching gears into abortion. Check this out. Hillary Clinton is an evil person. Check it out.
Give me your straightforward position on the issue of abortion.
My position is in line with Roe v. Wade, that women have a constitutional right to make these most intimate and personal and difficult decisions based on their conscience, their faith, their family, their doctor, and that it is something that really goes to the core of privacy. And I want to maintain that constitutional protection under Roe v. Wade. As you know, there is room for reasonable kinds of restrictions after a certain point in time. I think the life, the health of the mother are clear, and those should be included even as one moves on in pregnancy.
When or if doesn't...
I've had the same position for many years.
When or if does an unborn child have constitutional rights?
Well, under our laws currently, that is not something that exists. The unborn person doesn't have constitutional rights. Now,
all right, my problem with this right here, it might be a statement of law, but you know, the topic of the natural law has come up before, common law list. Understand that the natural law, the common law, was an attempt to put together morality and law, and that is something that people today complain about a lot. You know, there's no connection between morality and law. We've fallen away from the common law. My beef with her, though, is it's clearly absurd to say that the moment before a baby is born, it has no rights, because we believe as part of natural rights, our idea of rights is that a human being does have rights that are God-given, that are inside of you. You don't have to get them from anywhere. But according to Hillary, all she does is a legal analysis here, and it's chilling to me. It's like, you know, it makes me feel like she doesn't really care about any, you know, she only cares about her stuff. She doesn't care about people, and she definitely does not care about a fetus. Don't be a fetus in need of help and run into Hillary Clinton. You're in real trouble. Check this out.
That doesn't mean that we don't do everything we possibly can in the vast majority of instances to, you know, help a mother who is carrying a child and wants to make sure that child will be healthy, to have appropriate medical support. It doesn't mean that you don't do everything possible to try to fulfill your obligations, but it does not include sacrificing the woman's right to make decisions. And I think that's an important distinction that under Roe v. Wade, we've had enshrined under our Constitution.
You had said you're for some, you think there are room for some restrictions. So is it fair to say that women don't always have a full right to choose?
Well, under Roe v. Wade, that is the law. And as I said, I support the reasoning and the outcome in Roe v. Wade. So in the third trimester of pregnancy, there is room for looking at the life and the health of the mother. Now, most people, not all Republicans, not all conservatives, even agree with the life of the mother, but most do. Where the distinction comes in is the health of the mother. And when you have candidates running for president who say that there should be no exceptions, not for rape, not for incest, not for health, then I think you've gotten pretty extreme. And my view has always been, this is a choice. It is not a mandate. You know, I have traveled all over the world. I have seen what happens when governments make these decisions, whether it was forced sterilization, forced abortion in China, or forced childbearing in communist Romania. So I don't think that we should be allowing the government to make decisions that really properly belong to the individual.
Hey, NBC News fans, thanks for checking out our YouTube channel.
All right. So that's Hillary's position on abortion, and I find it sad that the only answer that she's got to any question is what the law states. We've got another phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, it's Tom.
Morning, Tom. What's up?
Good morning. Did you ever research her relationship with Robert Byrd, the Virginia senator? Ku Klux Klan member?
What's her relationship?
Porter. Oh, she's got glowing reviews of him when she was in her role as the secretary there. She seemed hugging him and giving like glowing reviews of how he's an inspiration to her.
Well, now we see what the inspiration resulted in.
Yes, sir.
You only have legal status. You don't have any moral status. Thanks, Tom. All right. So you have under the law legal status. Is that the best that Hillary can do is say this is the law? We'll take a break here. One of my favorite Van Morrison songs. 718 AM, Las Cruces AM, 1450, 523, 1450. Get your call in here. Should I dig into Clinton cash? I got to give you guys a little taste of it, just the how the thing starts off. Anyway, we'll be right back. Kelly?
Hey, Kelly, this is Neil. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Neil. What's up?
I just had a few comments about the abortion thing you were talking about.
Yes. Do you want to say them for the air?
Yeah, you bet.
Oh, I'll put you on hold. Hold on. Okay, we do have a phone call from Neil, and Neil, you had some comments on the Hillary abortion clip.
Yeah, you know, there are so many things wrong with what she said. We could talk about it for a half hour if we wanted to, but a few things that I thought were really disturbing and different, by the way. Well, besides the political thing, obviously she's trying to be on both sides of the issue, and she's tap dancing here big time. That's really pathetic, but other than that, she made an interesting comment. She didn't say life of the mother, if you notice. She just said the health of the mother. I think
yeah.
That's a new twist in expanding the envelope.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I mean, because you could argue mental health is just as important as physical health and the health of the mother.
Oh, yeah, and maybe she had a headache or whatever, and now all of a sudden it's an abortion is justified. So I think the wording is really important here, and she doesn't even say life of the mother. She just says health. I think that's dangerous. The other thing I think is really contradictory is her use of privacy. Talk about, you know, the key, obviously, to Roe v. Wade was supposedly privacy, right to privacy. But, you know, you got 99.7% of people who want to use the bathroom assigned to their biological gender have to, their privacy doesn't matter with regard to someone who says they're a, you know, something other than what they are biologically. So that seems contradictory to me.
Well, I'm sure she'd be in favor of using a bathroom for an abortion as part of privacy.
Yeah, probably. But last but not least, the only other thing I wanted to mention was everything is based on the decision of the woman. If you notice, she says a woman has a right to decide. I mean, even if it means killing, she even admitted that the person inside of a mother's womb in the third trimester, she refers to the fetus as a person, acknowledging life. And she says it does not matter. The woman's right to decide is more important than the person's right to live. I find that I just find that abhorrent.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, so she's a Yale lawyer. She knows how to talk about the law and stuff. But, I mean, as a person, she comes across as being totally unfeeling.
I totally agree. Well, you know why she's doing it, though. She's doing it because she's trying to appease as many sides as she possibly can, but primarily her group from now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think she is transparently a terrible person. I don't know what her ultimate goal in life is, but right now it seems like her husband's goal is to maximize power through the White House again and make as much money as they can for the a foundation. But for her, you know, when you listen to her, it's hard not to think that she got to be motivated a little bit by revenge. She just seems so angry.
Well, you know, the bottom line is she's not going to win any votes on the abortion issue. The abortion issue is, to some degree, more in the Republican side than it is the Democrats nowadays. And I don't think she's making any voters from this comment. It just shows you how immoral she is.
Beyond morality, she really is standing for this idea that as long as something is, you know, as long as it's legal, that's the direction to go. She, you know, she wouldn't talk about slavery that way.
And doesn't her immorality tie in with all this other stuff? You know, Benghazi and the foundation and the emails.
Yeah, it's part of the thing. Well, I got a few more clips here, but thanks for the call, Neil. Have a great day. All right, folks. All right. Been promising Clinton cash. Here it is. Here's the beginning of this movie. You got to go to YouTube. You got to watch it. It is jaw-dropping. It was just published on the 23rd, and it's... Well, now I see there's a couple of... Well, no, it's about 1.5 million up to this point. It's slowly gathering viewers. Check it out. Clinton Cash by the Name is the name of a book that was published, and I'm trying to remember the guy's name that published it, but... Peter Schweitzer, here we go.
The world is too small, our wisdom too limited, our time here too short to waste any more of it in winning fleeting victories at other people's expense.
The Clinton Global Initiative, which brings philanthropists and CEOs together with nonprofits to make concrete commitments aimed at some of the world's toughest problems. Almost 10 years in, they have leveraged billions of dollars in assistance in more than 180 countries.
CGI was designed to tackle big global challenges in bite-sized pieces with the conviction that regardless of size or scope, our problems will yield to concerted action and innovative partnerships of individuals, NGOs, businesses, and governments. We have to now find a way to triumph together.
All the problems that we face, from climate change to financial contagion to nuclear proliferation, are too complex and cross-cutting for any one government, or indeed for governments, to solve alone.
Because we believe that ending hunger is not only possible, but it is both a moral and strategic imperative.
Hillary Clinton is trying to shift the spotlight to global warming, the presidential contender unveiling her plans to combat climate change.
Together with innovative partners from the public and private sectors, we're working to make homes, universities, and cities more energy efficient.
We share a common future, and we are here to find common ground. Women must be empowered.
It's classic Bill Clinton, by using his birthday to help the causes he champions. From combating climate change to obesity and even HIV/AIDS.
Help bring new dignity and respect to women and girls all over the world. And in so doing, bring new strength and stability to families as well.
We are trying to do something no one has ever done before.
A new report today claims that the Clinton Foundation gives about 10% of its money that it raises to actual charities and the services that they offer.
It has been reported you've made $5 million making speeches. The president made more than $100 million.
Well, if you have no reason to remember, but we came out of the White House not only dead broke, but in debt.
6 years ago, Hillary Clinton was about to become Secretary of State. Barack Obama had nominated her. Everyone knew she was going to be confirmed by the Senate, going to be confirmed easily. But there was a thought. There was a question. There was a doubt out there about a potential conflict of interest.
The Clinton Foundation dropping its self-imposed ban on collecting funds from foreign governments and entities. And now the Washington Post reports total contributions to that foundation amount to $2 billion.
There's a lot of money sloshing around. Everything is blurred, and it's not good.
The questions scream out at me. What in the world happened with the foundation and these ulterior motives and this money and the email server? I'm sorry. Those scream out at me.
The amount of schmoozing involved.
All right, so that's the introduction to the beginning of this Clinton Cash movie. It is absolutely jaw-dropping. Now, I found another article that I was reading yesterday. The number of people that are either criminals or international criminals, some of which are charged with the worst human rights violations, and these type of people, individuals that were prosecuted and convicted of major frauds, that are part of this organization or are friends, personal friends of Bill and Hillary Clinton, is amazing. And that article was totally unrelated to this. 7:31, Kelly O'Connell, and we're going to take a slight pause here and come back and get into Clinton Cash just a little bit more. What is the Clinton Foundation? What's its purpose? And what are the real facts behind it? It's supposed to be a charity, but what is it really? AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. Colin, get your opinion on record.
The silence comes with me.
All right. So trying to cover a lot of ground here, but this Clinton Foundation is very, very important here. Very important. Here's a little bit more from this. And this is a little over an hour. It's about an hour and 5 minutes, so about 65 minutes, but very well put together. Clinton Foundation. So here's a foundation. It was just stated that only 10% of the charitable donations are used for charity, 10% of what's been given to them. So that means that Bill and Hillary Clinton have at their disposal, according to that metric, other than the cost of running the charity itself, whatever that is, that would put them at $1.8 billion. But there is a claim out there that there's much more money in it. It's just tucked away somewhere. So they've got at least $2 billion.
And crossing lines and one person putting money in a foundation and then Clinton getting unbelievable amounts for his speeches, contracts going one way or another, it's not good.
I look forward to working with all of you, particularly the appropriators. We have a lot of work to do, and it is such important work that lies ahead.
We did this with a very simple strategy.
Okay, so let me play you another clip here. And this is from a guy that used to run the Associated Press, Ron Fournier. I have had high-level Clinton staffers literally tell me that trust doesn't matter. They can win without Hillary being trusted.
Senior political columnist for the National Journal, Ron Fournier. Ron, good to see you.
Good morning.
We're going to read some of your latest piece in The Atlantic titled, Why Can't Hillary Clinton Stop Lying? Ron writes, in part, on Sunday, the former Secretary of State told Fox News' Chris Wallace that FBI Director James Comey cleared her of misleading the public about her rogue email server at the State Department. That's wrong, and she knows it, which makes it a lie. And yet, in my mind, the case against Clinton is not as disturbing as Trump's mendacity, megalomania, intolerance, and intellectual slovenliness. I'm angry at Clinton because I expect better. The country needs better. I say again, if Trump becomes president, the world will have Clinton to blame. That is why Clinton's advisors, senior Democrats, and members of the liberal media need to stop covering for Clinton. Please, for the sake of the country, tell her, stop lying.
Ron, it was breathtaking. The Fox News interview with Chris Wallace. Just, I don't know if I gasped watching it, but it was staggering that she would claim that she did not send or receive classified material on her server. After all of this, even when he showed Comey saying she wasn't telling the truth, she still denied it.
Yeah, I pulled out the last of my hair watching it. When you talk
it
to
looks
her,
like it.
God. When you talk to her people, they'll say, you know, what she did was she was parsing. She was talking about the fact that he said she didn't lie to the FBI. And I'm like, you know, this is not the day and age to be parsing. And a parse is another word for a lie because she's knowingly misleading. She did violate policy. We know that. She did expose U.S. secrets on a rogue server.
Ron, why did
we
you
know
do
that.
It? No, wait. Why did she lie when she knew she was lying and she knew that everybody knew that she was lying? Why didn't she just brush it off and say, I made mistakes. I'm terribly sorry. I've been chastened by the FBI director. I didn't break any laws, but sometimes I have to hold myself to a higher standard. I won't make the same mistake again. Why can't she say that? Her own supporters are asking that question.
I don't know. That's been the mystery now for what has been 18 months. That I think she'd put this election away a long time ago if she had come clean on email. Now all she's got to do, especially after last week, look, she had a great convention, a very aspirational message, and nicely tucking in the argument that Trump is not fit to be president, an argument that I really agree with, that a lot of Democrats, a lot of independents, even a lot of Republicans agree with, that he would be a bad man to be president. So all she's got to do now is get out of her own way. Why underscore what the one thing is that's holding her back from being president, which is how dishonest she's been about the scandal? So politically, it would make sense. Ethically, it would make sense just to say exactly what you said. What I did was wrong. Here's why I did it. It violated policy. It exposed U.S. secrets. I did it because Republicans, they were going to be mean to me. But you know what? I got to be better than Republicans. And then move on. Why go back to the 1990s and do a Clintonian parse that might have worked when there was gatekeepers and it was a different political environment? It doesn't work now when every member of the public has access to what she has said before, has access to the records that show that, you know, what she did was wrong and against policy. I don't get it. You know what really frustrates me is all the Democrats who call people like me frustrated with Clinton. And I want to tell them what I did with this column. Stop calling me. Call Brooklyn. Tell them to quit lying and you quit covering for her. Force her to do the right thing so that you can win this race.
Just to be totally clear, that congressional hearing on July the 7th, Trey Gowdy asked Director Comey, is it true that what she said? And he said nothing was marked classified. He said that's absolutely not true. That's right. That's from Jim Comey from the FBI. So that's the coming out of his investigation. Do you think part of it, though, Ron, is that she has assessed in this race that she is up against someone that she can safely hold the ball and not go into detail and not talk about what exactly she did because she's getting away with it against Donald Trump?
Yeah, that is why. But I'm afraid she might be making a bad assessment for two reasons. One, that's been their assessment from the beginning. I literally had senior officials on the record, or not on the record, on background a year ago saying, or more than a year ago, saying that trust doesn't matter, that Bill Clinton won even though he was trusted less than the two people he ran against. They don't realize that the world has changed. And we now see that trust does matter. It's really destroyed her credibility. Now, she could still win, even by continuing this parsing and this lying. But then she's going to be leading a country where two-thirds of the people don't trust her. And you can't transform our politics. You can't do half of the things that she wants to do that need to be done if people don't trust her. So that's the miscalculation they're making. They're only worried about winning this news cycle. They're only worried about winning on Election Day.
All right. So does trust matter? We'll take a break, and then I'll have a clip for you with Hillary Clinton being interviewed by Chris Wallace over the email gate. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE, 523-1450 at 744. We'll be right back in a moment. All right, so here is this clip of this interview with Hillary. She's so interesting to listen to. All right, check this out. Hillary Clinton, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong.
The whole world was aflame.
The emails.
Yes.
I want to ask you about just one aspect of them, and that's what you told the American people.
I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified materials. I am confident that I never sent nor received any information that was classified at the time. I had not sent classified material nor received anything marked classified.
After a long investigation, FBI Director James Comey said none of those things that you told the American public were true.
Chris, that's not what I heard Director Comey say, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to, in my view, clarify. Director Comey said that my answers were truthful and what I've said is consistent with what I have told the American people, that there were decisions discussed and made to classify retroactively certain of the emails. I was communicating with over 300 people in my emailing. They certainly did not believe and had no reason to believe that what they were sending was classified. Now, in retrospect, different agencies come in and say, well, it should have been, but that's not what was happening in real time.
But in a congressional hearing on July 7th, Director Comey directly contradicted what you had told the public.
Secretary Clinton said there was nothing marked classified on her emails either sent or received. Was that true?
That's not true.
Secretary Clinton said I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified material. Was that true?
Now, there was classified material emailed.
He directly contradicted what...
Well,
And let me just yeah. He not only directly contradicted what you said, he also said in that hearing that you were extremely careless and negligent.
Well, Chris, I looked at the whole transcript of everything that was said, and what I believe is, number one, I made a mistake not using two different email addresses. I have said that, and I repeat it again today. It is certainly not anything that I ever would do again. I take classification seriously. I relied on and had every reason to rely on the judgments of the professionals with whom I worked. And so in retrospect, maybe some people are saying, well, among those 300 people, they made the wrong call. At the time, there was no reason, in my view, to doubt the professionalism and the determination by the people who work every single day on behalf of our country.
God bless Hillary Clinton. All right, we'll come back with a little bit, just a little ending for this. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE.
Let me tell my Lord.
All right, so we used to do our Glenn Beck watch when he was really going off the rails, but he's kind of rolled it back a little bit since Cruz got out of the game. And I want to know how many people for tomorrow's show, you can call in the Donnas or whoever, how many people still have absolute faith in Cruz, Ted Cruz? Question for tomorrow, but what's going on now in the Beck kingdom is that he is suing his former president, a guy by the name of Chris Balfe. Now, I've never talked to Chris Balfe, but I have talked to his brother, and his brother is Kevin Balfe, and that's when I was doing a little bit of writing for Glenn, who I've never met or talked to either. But we've got a call. Thanks for the call. Well, if you call in, hang in there a little bit. Allow me to finish my piece. Well, how about this? I'll call you. You call in. I'll pick the phone up, but I'll keep the button off live air until I'm done making my point, so you don't think you're forgotten. But I'd like to know. I don't claim to be a prophet about Ted Cruz. All I said is let's wait before we call him a statesman. And now it seems to me he's the total opposite of a statesman, but that's my take on it. But anyway, the story about Glenn Beck now. So Glenn Beck's company is hemorrhaging money. It's hemorrhaging viewers. When you go on to online sites, YouTube or wherever, where people comment about Glenn Beck, 95% of it is negative, which I find astounding because Glenn Beck spent his entire life building up his brand and being a constitutionalist, anti-communist, anti-Obama. I mean, he really paid his dues, and then he threw it away in a very short period of time. He kind of hitched his wagon to a star. Now, there's a story out there that his brand, his radio show in the empire that he built was in large part underwritten by the Mormon Church. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea, but I found that kind of interesting. He was worth about $100 million, maybe $110 million. I think he's now down to 90 or 80 million, and he's suing the ex-president because they entered into an agreement for a studio for an entire floor of a pretty big building in New York. $2 million a year for 10 years. And now, and they've walked away from the lease and obviously have some obligation there. So, and Chris Bolf is started a new business and they're hiring these old Glenn Beck workers. But, you know, if you don't forget, Glenn Beck fired like 40 people a couple of months ago. So anyway, here's one last shot on Hillary's statements. I think we got enough time for this.
Not email any classified material to anyone. There is no classified material.
110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined by the owning agency to contain classified information at the time they were sent or received.
I provided all my emails that could possibly be work-related.
Several thousand work-related emails that were not among the group of 30,000 emails returned by Secretary Clinton.
I thought using one device would be simpler.
She also used numerous mobile devices to send and to read email.
There were no security breaches.
It is possible that hostile actors gained access to Secretary Clinton's personal email account.
It was my practice to communicate with State Department and other government officials on their .gov accounts.
Hostile actors gained access to the private commercial email accounts of people with whom Secretary Clinton was in regular contact from her personal account.
No doubt that we've done exactly what we should have done.
They were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information.
People will be able to judge for themselves.
We cannot find a case that would support bringing criminal charges on these facts.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. I just was doing some research on Khizr Khan. He is, you're not going to believe this, this guy who sounded so kind of backwards on the stage, he is a graduate of Harvard, and I think he might be a graduate of Harvard Law School. I'll have to do a little bit more research, but just happens to be the same school where Obama went. But 7:59, Kelly O'Connell, thanks for hanging out with me. I really enjoyed it, and hope you have a wonderful day. Yeah, it's supposed to rain tonight, so cover up, get an umbrella. We'll meet you back in 22 hours. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE. Ciao.